This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Worries about China's coronavirus have grabbed headlines, but there's good news in the fight against another disease affecting China's food supply and, by extension, U.S. animal feed sales in China. USDA's development of a promising new vaccine against African swine fever is a bit of good news as the world deals with China spreading coronavirus in animals and humans. The so far 100% effective USDA vaccine against ASF could give U.S. ag exporters to China another big boost as that nation struggles with the pig disease that's decimated its herd. American Farm Bureau trade advisor Dave Salmonson.
Depending over time how that effective that is, they can get it commercialized and when, and get it into hopefully use in China and many other countries that have this problem in the swine herd. That would certainly, if China builds back their herd, that would certainly increase demand for animal feeds into China, primarily our soybeans.
U.S. soybeans were hit hardest by the now-ended tariff war between China and the United States, but are now recovering ahead of and with the just-signed Phase 1 trade deal with China. Salmonson says the new vaccine can only further help that.
Again, this is another factor that certainly will impact upon our agricultural exports to China over the next few years.
In the meantime, African swine fever was on the brink of entering Germany, home to 26 million pigs and Europe's largest pork producer. Germany could face a massive hog slaughter that would reverberate across markets worldwide. In other ag news, China over the weekend reported the development of H5N1 bird flu near the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. China's Ministry of Agriculture Rural Affairs says the infected farm has 7,800 chickens and 4,500 have died because of the bird flu. Local authorities have culled nearly 18,000 birds after the outbreak. The South China Morning Post reports the H5N1 outbreak comes even as Chinese authorities continue to scramble to contain the spread of the novel coronavirus, further stretching the nation's already heavily strained resources needed to combat the health threat. The World Health Organization calls H5N1 a type of influenza virus that causes a highly infectious, severe respiratory disease in birds. Human cases of H5N1 avian influenza occur occasionally, but it's difficult to transmit the infection from person to person. When people do become infected, the mortality rate is about 60%. However, almost all cases of H5N1 infection in people are associated with close contact with infected live or dead birds or H5N1 contaminated environments. In other ag news here on your Tuesday morning, the Department of Agriculture yesterday announced the third and final tranche of 2019 market facilitation payments for farmers. The payments will begin to show up in farmers' bank accounts by the end of this week, according to the USDA. The payments follow the Phase 1 agreement with China and the U.S. on the signing of the USMCA-Mexico agreement. However, the Agriculture Secretary, Sonny Perdue, says we must not forget that 2019 was a tough year for farmers, as they were the tip of the spear when it came to unfair trade retaliation. The payments are aimed at assisting farmers suffering from damage due to trade retaliation by foreign nations. This is the final of three tranches of MFP. The first round was comprised of the higher of either 50% of a producer's calculated payment or $15 per acre, which may reduce the potential payments to be made in tranche 3. The second tranche was 25% of the total payment expected, in addition to the 50% from the first tranche, and this final tranche will be that last 25%. In other ag news here on your Tuesday, grain quality issues mean extra safety considerations for farmers. Michael Clemens has this report with GSI.
Due to the late harvest, many farmers stored grain at higher than recommended moisture levels this past fall. That increases the risk of entrapment if they enter their bins to check on problems such as mold or plugged augers, according to Gary Woodruff, GSI grain conditioning expert.
In many cases, grain was stored above 15% moisture, often due to insufficient drying capacity or relying on natural air drying. As a result, grain went into the bins at a lower quality, higher moisture, and with more fines than usual, which makes this year much more dangerous to enter the bin. That is why we are emphasizing that farmers should never enter a bin when there is a risk of becoming entrapped. The only real fix for out-of-condition grain is to unload the bin down to where the affected grain can be removed. This likely means the grain will have to be marketed early, and poor quality grain may receive a dock at the elevator.
Woodruff recommends that farmers regularly check the quality of their grain this winter with safety in mind. In addition to grain monitoring controls, he says they should visually inspect their grain at least every other week.
Climb to the bin manhole, and without entering, look at the grain surface to see if there has been crusting or any off smells that may indicate a mold issue. Most problems show up on the surface first. It's best if a sample from the surface is checked for moisture. Any increase in moisture indicates condition problems in the bin. However, entering a bin and walking on the surface runs the risk of a crust over a cavity breaking and the farmer tumbling into the grain becoming quickly engulfed. That's why we always recommend a policy of zero entry.
Woodruff says if farmers decide anyway to enter their bin, there are precautions they should take.
Wear a rope and harness to prevent falling into the grain if the surface breaks. Always have another person present who can call for emergency assistance if entrapment or an injury should occur. Lock out all electrical controls so augers cannot run when anyone is in the bin. And last, consult local university websites for additional grain bin safety recommendations.
For additional information, farmers can contact their GSI dealers or visit grainsystems.com. Michael Clements reporting.
From grain, now to livestock news from around the country. The U.S. cattle inventory report released on Friday shows a slight decline in inventory levels from last year. The report pegged U.S. cattle herd, at 94.4 million head on January 1st, slightly below the 94.8 million head reported January 1st of last year. All heifers 500 pounds and over as of January 1st totaled 20.1 million head, slightly below the 20.2 million head a year ago. Beef replacement heifers at 5.77 million head were down 2% from a year ago. Milk replacement heifers at 4.64 million head were down 2% from the previous year. Other heifers at 9.71 million head were 1% above a year earlier. Cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the United States for all feedlots totaled 14.7 million. That's up 2% from 2019. The 2019 calf crop in the U.S. was estimated at 36.1 million head, and that's down 1% from the last year's calf crop. Moving on to state ag news now on your Tuesday. If you took off the sweatshirts and opened a window or two at your home on Sunday, you weren't alone across Illinois. Temperatures were record breakers in parts of the state. Chris Miller with the National Weather Service in Lincoln indicates at their office in Lincoln it was the warmest February 2nd in over 100 years. Temperatures in Lincoln weren't the only areas of Illinois with record highs.
We had a nice strong south wind over the last couple of days that was getting the warmer temperatures closer and closer and closer to our area, and then that warm front just pushed through the area, and temperatures generally in the lower, in some places, middle to upper 60s. In southern Illinois, I know there were a couple spots that hit close to 70, and here in Lincoln, we set a new record. 63 degrees was our high temperature yesterday. That broke a record back in 1911, so it's the warmest February 2nd in 109 years. And in fact, by early afternoon, shortly after 12 noon, Peoria broke their record. They got up 58 degrees. The previous record was 54, set back in 1920, exactly 100 years ago. Same thing in Springfield. So by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we had temperatures ranging anywhere from 60 in Peoria to, like I said, we were up 67 degrees down at Olney. Even Galesburg, where there were some areas up in the northwest part of the state where there was still a little bit of snow left on the ground when the morning started, they even got to 55 degrees.
The large area of warm air encompassed almost the entirety of the Midwest, according to Miller. He notes, though, this week is things are going to take a pretty sharp turn, as we can expect midweek snowfall of several inches. And that moves on to the weather advisories going on right now. There's a winter weather advisory in effect tonight from 6 until midnight. And then there'll be a winter storm watch that'll go into effect 6 a.m. tomorrow morning from 6 to 6 a.m. on Thursday. And those are for Jersey, Macoupin, and Madison and Montgomery counties. So a winter storm watch is in effect 6 a.m. tomorrow to 6 a.m. Thursday for Jersey, Macoupin, Madison, and Montgomery County. In other news from around the state, the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation announced that statewide adult-use cannabis sales in January totaled $39,247,840.83. Dispensaries across the state sold 972,045 items over the 31 days of January. Sales to Illinois residents totaled $30,611,632.22, while sales to out-of-state residents totaled $8,636,208.61. A portion of every cannabis sale will be reinvested in communities harmed the most by the failed war on drugs. Last month, the Illinois Department of Agriculture released applications for cannabis infuser, craft grower, and transporter licenses. The applications are available on the department's website. IDOA will begin accepting completed applications on Friday, February 14th, and all cannabis infuser, transporter, and craft grower applications must be submitted by 5 p.m. on Monday, March 16th. In news from the IDNR, hunters in Illinois harvested a preliminary statewide total of 740 wild turkeys during the 2019-2020 fall archery season. The total compares with the statewide turkey harvest of 738 in the 2018-19 season. For the 1920 season, 22,728 permits were sold, compared to 23,298 for the 18-19 season. The season dates were October 1, 2019 to January 19, 2020, and all 102 counties were open to hunting in Illinois. The top counties for fall archery wild turkey harvest were Jefferson County with 25, Knox County with 23, Cass County with 20, and Jackson and Randolph tied for 18. The 2020 Illinois Hunting, Fishing, and Sportsman's Combination licenses will go on sale beginning on March 1st at 8 a.m., and those 2020 licenses will be valid through March 31st of 2021. Illinois 2019 licenses are valid through March 31st of this year. Licenses purchased prior to March 1st of this year will be considered a 2019 license and will only be valid through March 31st of this year. So if you have a new license and need one for the next year, purchase that on or after March 1st of this year. And that'll wrap it up for this Tuesday morning edition of the Farm Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us or anything for the Ag Community Bulletin Board, those items can be emailed to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, February 4th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.